The information featured in this program is general in nature and therefore should not be relied upon. Guests appearing on the program may have commercial arrangements with some of the companies mentioned. Before making any investment, insurance or financial planning decisions, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you. Business Tuesday continues with Your Money, Your Call.
Hello and welcome to Your Money, Your Call. I'm Julia Lee from Bell Direct. If you have a question about shares, our phone lines are open right now on 1300 30 34 35, or you can always email us on yourmoney@skynews.com.au. And joining me on the panel tonight, we're very lucky to have Joe Mager from The Motley Fool and also Nick Raj from The Charters. Well, what a week it's going to be. It's going to be a massive week in terms of the markets, watching the US election and the impact that it's going to have on markets. And, of course, Motley Fool launching a new fund as well.
That is correct. We've got a fund launching a week from today.
That's huge. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's very exciting.
So I guess I'm curious, you know, given the environment that we're in at the moment, how much cash do you have? How are you managing money and portfolios and positions at the moment, Joe? What do you think?
Sure. So in the model portfolio we're running in advance of the fund launching, we're sitting on about 14% cash. We've got 19 positions total. The companies that we own are kind of classically foolish in that strong recurring revenue models, aligned management teams, attractive valuations. But I'm also looking a lot more at balance sheets these days, and they're a lot more cash heavy than they have been in the past in terms of what I'm looking for, just in terms of being defensive. So we're sitting a little more on cash than people otherwise might, but you know, part of that too is the fund is going to be focused on small cap companies. We want to maintain liquidity so that we can be a little more agile.
Okay, so on one side we have attractive companies at reasonable prices, and then on the other side we have momentum. So what are you doing with your momentum portfolios at the moment?
Yeah, we're very different, obviously doing something completely different. Personally, I'm 75% cash in the main portfolio.
Wow.
And we've been taking defensive action over the last 2 months as the trend has reversed. And if we get a bad result tonight or tomorrow, then potentially we'll go fully 100% cash, just like we did in the GFC. It's just our way of defending, and that's the way we do things. And it's not discretionary, it's fully systematic. So if the market turns up, we just hop back on board and ride it higher. If it turns down or keeps going down, we keep going to cash. That's the way we play it.
Okay, so that's pretty huge, 75% cash versus 14% cash. So this should be a pretty interesting show. I mean, just looking at the market and I guess the technicals of the market of where we are, we've seen considerable amount of weakness throughout the last few weeks. Nick, what do you think is going to happen?
What's going to happen tonight? Well,
to the rest of the year.
Well, I don't know. Let's see what happens tonight, because we could be eating those words tomorrow. Technically, the big end of town, I still think, is going to struggle. My view for the last 12, 18 months has been the small caps is the place to be. I still maintain that it's going to continue to be the place to be. From a technical perspective, the patterns that we're seeing in the small caps are significantly better than what we're seeing in the large caps. In fact, they retain a very bullish outlook, whereas the large caps don't. The large caps are more a corrective movement, and the best we can expect from that is really the best we can expect from that is some kind of a bounce, whereas the smaller caps continue to look very, very bullish. In fact, they've pulled back to a significant level now that we believe could be an inflection point. If we get a positive result tonight, I think it's going to look very good, and the small caps can go to new recent highs again.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, the small cap space has been very exciting. And look, the pullback that we've seen, Joe, means that there's lots of opportunities out there in the marketplace.
Yep.
For a while there, you know, the market was selling off high PE growth.
Yeah,
but, you know, today we saw a bit of a bounce back. Domino's up another 6.7%. REA Group was up by 5.8%. We saw some pretty strong moves on the market. So where are you finding the opportunities?
Well, I am happy to say that a lot of my favorite names have pulled back quite a bit. Say 3 months ago, they were all getting pretty expensive. And as someone who's looking to launch a fund, I was getting annoyed with that. But they've come back, and that's exciting. I mean, we look at small caps, obviously. And I think that's the place where you can find the biggest variant perception. So just to talk about what we're looking at in the model portfolio, we've The average stock in there is covered by 4 analysts. The average in our benchmark, the small awards, is covered by 8, and the average in the ASX 200 is covered by 14. Mm. So I think on average, if you're just looking at smaller companies, statistically, you're more likely to be able to find opportunities than if you're chasing the same big names that most every other investor is looking for.
Okay, so we do have our first email, so let's go straight to this email from Andrew, who asks, I'm looking to add AGL and Aurora to my portfolio. What are the panel's technical and fundamental thoughts on both of these companies? You know, Aurora's been doing extremely well. ORA is a stock code there. And AGL Energy, just in that energy utility space, we've seen a little bit of the bounce back there for energy. Not so much for utilities, though, which has kind of been sold off with the high-yielding bond proxy thing. So looking at these two stocks, Nick, what do you think here?
Yeah, well, just on that general kind of infrastructure, utilities kind of section, a lot of the charts there are showing very similar patterns. And the price progression on those patterns suggest that what we've witnessed over the last month or two in this decline is it's going to be the first stage of a much broader and longer lasting corrective movement. Ultimately, it's continuing to be bullish, but I would say over the next, you know, 6 to 8 months or so, these stocks are going to have to sort themselves out a little bit more before going to new highs again. Specifically with these stocks you've just mentioned here, ORA, again, it's a nice corrective. It's being very controlled. I like the look of it. It's been a good trend leading into this. So this has been a very healthy correction, I think, what we've seen here at the moment. And the other one, AGL. A bit of technical damage was done a few months ago. It's trying to have a little bit of a bounce now. But again, like a lot of these high-yielding stocks, it's going to have to do a little bit more work before it will break out to new highs. So patience with AGL. ORA looks positive.
Okay, so liking ORA, but AGL, there might be some more work there. Joe, what are your views on these two stocks?
If I was thinking... I'm going to kind of skip over them. So if I was thinking about positioning these around something defensive-ish, and that's how you're thinking about them, long-term defensive-ish holdings, I would look at something like Bapcor instead. So Bapcor is a parent of Burson Group. It's an auto parts distribution business. It's not very exciting, but boring can be beautiful. It's a very resilient business, and auto parts distribution is one of the few businesses that during tough times could actually do better. And the reason is that people put off buying a new car, but when their car breaks down, they still need to get it fixed. So Burson's a beneficiary of that. Right now, they are attempting to take over Helby, which is a company in New Zealand. It's actually becoming interesting, and a lot of investors think that they're going to have to raise their bid in a big way, and I think that's why the shares have pulled back recently. I don't think that's likely. I think they've already got 27%, and this is public information. They've got 27% of the vote already locked down. If they do have to raise their bid, I don't think it'll be materially. I think the valuation is attractive today. If you look out on a full-year basis, it's selling for about 22 times consensus estimates, which I think is very reasonable. It's got a nice yield and great management team.
Lots of ideas there for the portfolio if you are looking at a bit of a defensive slant. We do have our first caller on the line, so let's go straight to Adrian from Adelaide. Adrian, welcome to the show. What's your question for our panel tonight?
Hi, guys. Thanks very much. Great show. I'm just tossing up as two companies, mining companies in Western Australia.
Sure.
That one of them's Neurometals, which is NMT,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is Maximum Resources, both in Western Australia. I just wonder what your panel's thoughts are on either of them, which would be a good pick out of both of them.
Okay, so having a look at Neometals and Maximus Resources, I mean, two pretty different companies. One has a market cap of $188 million, which is Neometals, and the other has a market cap of $7 million, Maximus Resources. So probably going to be able to talk a little bit more on Neometals given its market capitalization and liquidity, whereas Maximus Resources, you know, the lack of liquidity there makes it kind of hard to get in and out of unless you're a true believer and you're in there for the long term. Looking at Neometals, originally, you know, a gold stock, I think it used to be Reed Resources. resources, but now it's got, I guess, a lithium project as well, Mount Marion, in there. And recently it's just pulled back from around about that 50-cent mark to just under 34 cents at the moment. So, Nick, what do you think here?
Yeah, look, that looks quite good, Adrian. One thing to take away from this chart we're looking at on the screen here is on the left-hand side, you can see the price action is obviously very, very strong and very, very clean. That's known as impulsive price action. Whereas if you look at the type of price action that we've seen on the way down, it's a lot choppier, it's a lot shallower. And when you get that choppy, shallow kind of price action, that's known as corrective price action. And a normal trending stock will show an impulse followed by a correction, followed by an impulse followed by a correction. So you get the strong price action followed by the choppy price action. So this is very, very positive. So long as we don't get any impulsive movement to the downside, this is corrective. It needs a bit of a rest after that big trend up. Ideally now, what I'd like to see, and as you can see, historically, it's got a great capacity to trend. So when it starts going again, you want to get on board. But ideally, we want to get some upside momentum going before we jump on that. That would be the better thing to do. And that will come in at around that sort of 38 cent level, just above those recent highs. So if the stock can start moving up through 38 cents, it's probably a worthy buy to see if it can't get going again.
Okay, so looking at some key levels there for Neo Metals, I guess it is at a pretty pivotal point. Construction of the Mount Marion project is continuing, and that's a joint venture with Mineral Resources as well as a Chinese company. So it does look like it's, it's getting pretty close to production. I noticed that Macquarie have an outperform on the stock. What do you think about this one, Joe?
It seems pretty speculative to me. I can't say that I know too much about lithium mining. Overall, I think that's a pretty speculative space. I think mining in general was speculative, and in particular, something like this, where I think it's unlikely that most people watching or here, including me, have an edge on lithium prices and where they're going over the long term, or the medium term, or short term. So I'd say that that's pretty hairy. And on the other one that came up, Maximus, to Julia's point, I've never heard of this company. It's tiny. But just as a general matter, I'd say, and never heard of this company, I'm just looking at Google Finance. It looks like the stock is down 98% since 2005, and maybe that's wrong. But generally speaking, I would say companies that are off that catastrophically over such a long time rarely work out well. So not specific to that company, but generally speaking, I'd feel pretty high conviction that companies with those traits at that kind of market cap don't work out well for.
Okay, so Maximum's probably tiny for us to be talking too much about, but Neo Metals does look pretty interesting, and I guess it's all dependent on lithium pricing and where the pricing power is at. And at the moment, the pricing power still seems to be in the hands of the processors and the miners, which is great news. But of course, as more production does come online, that relationship may shift. Neo Metals is an interesting one because it does have that Chinese partner as well that it could leverage off. And I think that's one of the things you look at when you're looking at these companies where they are starting to see production, to see whether there are any existing relationships where they could go and on-sell their product from. So I guess just trying to separate, some of those mining companies that have just been benefiting from changing their business overnight from base metals to lithium companies to an actual lithium production company. And this company, pretty near production, so keeping an eye on Neo Metals. NMT is the stock code there. I guess just having a look at lithium stocks, are there any that you're watching at the moment, or Joe, you're just staying on
the metal space? I'll let other people have a go at that one.
Okay, and what about the renewable space? And Infogen's been doing pretty well there on the market.
I think that, so like renewable energy, I think renewable energy has a very bright future. I think it's very hard to tell who and how money is going to be made off of that, and I'm likely to just keep watching that from the sidelines and rooting for it, but from the sidelines.
Okay, and I guess just having a look at companies like Infogen, they act a little bit different from your typical oil and gas companies. Recently, we saw a pretty good update coming through.
Yeah, and I had that one myself personally. That was a great trade we had in there. We're now out of it. It's pulled back a little bit. Just have a look here. Yeah, so we rode that for most of this year and got out back in August, September, as that trend turned. So It's one of these stocks that has a history of trending very, very well, and they're great to be on when they go. But, similar to Joe, personally, I don't trade any of these resource or mining kinds of stocks. They don't suit trend following per se. They tend to be too volatile. Obviously, you'll get some like, Whitehaven that just keep on keeping on. But when you test, a large sample of those kinds of stocks, it's best, in my opinion, and my research suggests it's best to stand aside from them.
Okay, so on that note, we'll be back with more after this short break. If you'd like to speak with our expert panel, our phone lines are open on 1300 30 34 35, or you can email us yourmoney@skynews.com.au. Welcome back to Your Money, Your Call. We are still taking your calls on 1300 30 34 35 and your emails, yourmoney@skynews.com.au. And we now have Russ on the line from the Gold Coast. Russ, welcome to the show. How can we help you tonight?
Well, I have two questions. Basically, Sure. Well, they're so basic, I'm afraid they're stupid. But anyway,
I admire that honesty.
You often hear of dividends being grossed up. Like, for instance, Telstra, they say it's a 6% dividend, but 9% grossed up.
Sure.
Just don't understand what that means. And the other thing is really simple. For example, I've noticed that Wesfarmers has a very high PE of 111, but it's considered a pretty normal share, and I can't see how that's possible.
Okay, so two questions. The first around the grossed-up dividend. And I guess with Telstra, it's got a 4.5% dividend yield, but grossed-up, it includes the dividend franking credit. So if the company's paid tax in Australia at 30%, you'll usually get a credit for the tax that the company's already paid. So generally that means if you're on a tax rate of less than 30%, you effectively almost get a refund from the tax office. And if you're on a tax rate of greater than 30%, then you just pay sort of the difference between the company, the tax rate that the company has paid. So sometimes when people are talking about dividend, because you get the benefit of franking, they gross it up. So you get that grossed up, and of course company tax rates at about 30%. But sometimes it's less or more, depending on whether they make all that revenue in Australia or if they've even made a profit. Looking at Wesfarmers, though, I guess the question was on PE ratios, and that's a great question for Joe. So let's go straight to Joe.
I was really hoping you'd come to me on this one. So this is a great example of how you can't just invest based on a single metric. And in this case, with Wesfarmers, I have no doubt that there was a lot of one-off noise there, and they took a pretty significant charge that was driving this. That happens fairly often with companies, and so it's important to look at underlying results as well. Underlying results strip out one-time gains and losses. Now, the problem with that is companies will throw a lot of stuff in underlying results that they consider one-time. There were probably restructuring costs that may not actually be one-time. So you need to be mindful of how often companies do that. But in this case, I would say if you looked on an underlying basis, Wesfarmers is probably selling for more like 20 times earnings off the top of my head instead of the 113. So it pays to go look at the actual results from the company. And it's not terribly complex, to be honest. They'll usually be pretty upfront, particularly in a situation where the underlying results are better than the official results. They will definitely make a point of trying to show you what those numbers are.
And given we're talking about Telstra and Wesfarmers, we should talk about the stocks as well. Nick, what are your thoughts on Telstra and Wesfarmers?
Telstra, look, this is the problem with the big end of town I was talking about earlier today or earlier this evening. All the banks are looking much the same. These top 20 stocks are at the bottom end of their ranges that they've been in for, they're very, very heavy. They're well off their highs. They're very corrective in nature. And at this stage, the best I would hope out of them is some kind of a bounce rather than any sustainable upside. So that's why I'm sticking with the small caps. That's where the trends are. That's where the money's to be made unless you want to trade these bounces. Telstra's down below a line of support there now, and we're back to levels not seen since early 2015. And there's just no upside momentum at the moment. So best for Telstra, if it does hold here around this $5, you might get a bounce back up towards $5.70, $5.80, but that would really be it.
Okay, so Telstra not looking too good. I mean, Joe, do you like Telstra? A lot of people, you know, talk about that 6.3% dividend yield.
It's a nice yield. I'm lukewarmly positive on Telstra. To be honest, if someone's willing to take a little more risk, I'd look at TPG. TPG, we were talking about off camera earlier, it's a bit of a spicy meatball, so pretty well known that they had a pretty massive disappointment in terms of guidance for the year, and there's going to be a lot more NBN-driven competition. That said, the shares have absolutely fallen off a cliff, and I think they've got some great assets, and the guy who runs it, David Teo, is a tremendous capital allocator with an amazing track record of value creation, so it's spicier than either of these names, I would say. But if you're a long-term investor who can stomach some more risk and volatility, I think it's attractive.
Okay, so TPG, why not Berkus?
I think they're both interesting. I'm a little turned off by the drama and intrigue with the board recently, and I just have a lot of confidence based on David Teo's track record, and so long as he's running the show and owns a huge chunk of the company, I'd feel comfortable betting on him.
Sure. And what about Wesfarmers? I mean, giant on the... Oh, what was that, Nick? I just saw your nose move. It didn't look
that was a
like
smelly,
a positive
that's
signal.
A smelly. Look, from a momentum perspective, you know, that chart, that's a good-looking chart, that in terms of what it's, you know, what the stock has done, the exact same thing for the last 2-3 years, basically just chopped around. So really the only way to play this is buy it at the bottom end of the range, which is down around that $38-$39 level, sell at the top end of the range, which is up around that $46 level, and that's really all the best you're going to see at this stage. At the moment, we're kind of down towards the bottom end of the range, but, you know, I guess if we can get a little bit of a spook tonight, we might go to the bottom end of that range, and that would possibly be a better buying opportunity. But from my perspective, being a momentum-style trader, this stock is just on the back burner. I'd have no interest in it whatsoever.
Okay, so no interest in Wesfarmers. I mean, the supermarket wars are biting, but, you know, the coal project is looking a little bit better, and that might help its profit numbers. What do you think?
It is looking a lot better. I would say there was some probably luck involved with that. It's been a pretty amazing recovery in coal prices, but I think I'm lukewarm on Wesfarmers. The reality is they've got some great assets, so Coles has done incredibly well in a tough competitive market that I think will stay tough and competitive, but they've done very well, and Bunnings is just an absolute treasure of a business that if it was independent on its own, I would absolutely own. But then they've got some less impressive businesses. You know, you think of kind of the mid-market retail that's confused. You think about Target, you think of Kmart, and it's hard to decide exactly what you're going to do with those business lines. I know they're thinking about that now. So to me, it is a conglomerate, a hodgepodge of retail assets, some better than others. And I'm not particularly bullish or bearish on it, to be honest.
Okay. I guess just looking at the top 20, given that we're looking at these big ones, any of interest to you? And look, just in the past week, the ones that have been doing well are BHP, Billiton, Woodside Petroleum, which is up by about 2%. Wesfarmers up 1.4%. And on the flip side, you know, the banks haven't been doing so well. NAB, it's down 5.8%, but it went ex-dividend. QBE, though, down 3.4%. And Brambles down 3.2%.
I think the best out of the top stocks at the moment is probably ANZ. You know, it's been an outperformer over the last 6 or 7 months. It's broken out to sort of recent new highs as opposed to stocks like CBA that are testing recent new lows. So from a momentum perspective, ANZ is up there. Apart from that, look, you know, I just can't see any upside, sustainable upside.
I find that so interesting, though. What about the material stocks, BHP, Rio Tinto?
Yeah, but again, look at the price action. It's a slow crawl higher. It's that choppy price action, which means it's more of a bounce rather than a sustainable trend. You know, it could go higher, but when we want to get on a stock that's really moving, it's got to be nice, clean, crisp kind of moves. They're the trends you want to get on. And they're just not really available in larger cap stocks, mainly smaller caps that aren't so institutionalized.
Okay, we do need to go to a short break, so stick with us to get Joe's thoughts after the break. And of course, if you'd like to speak with our expert panel, please call us on 1300 30 34 35 or you can email us yourmoney@skynews.com.au. Welcome back to the program. Joining me on the panel tonight is Joe Mega from Lakehouse Capital and also Nick Raj from the Chartist. And if you're wondering why Joe's from Lakehurst Capital, that's the name of the new fund?
That's correct. It's a new funds family owned by the Motley Fool.
Excellent. And don't forget, if you have a question you'd like answered, please give us a call on 1300 30 34 35, or you can email yourmoney@skynews.com.au. Before the break, we were talking about the top 20. We didn't have a chance to get to Joe. So, Joe,
cool.
Any interesting stocks in the top 20?
Yeah, my two favorites would probably be Transurban and CSL. The investment cases you would know well, but Transurban doesn't get much more attractive in a boring way than toll roads. Right up there with auto parts distribution in terms of boring being beautiful. Another one there, CSL, I mean, that's a business that I have to admit, in isolation, I don't really understand any of the technologies, and I have a hard time pronouncing them. That said, I do know that they have a pretty strong track record of capital allocation. They got a strong balance sheet, and they have a pretty diverse basket of all those drugs whose names I have a hard time pronouncing. So I think that of the ones on here, I think that's attractive. And I know it's funny, but the irony is I think a lot of people would say, oh, I'd write that off because I can't pronounce most of these drugs. But then they would go out and they own a bank that's levered 16 to 1, and they don't find that intimidating. So I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, I know this camera panned to you. So any thoughts around that, Nick?
Look, you know, they've had a nice pullback. CSL's come back to good support here. There's been a little bit of technical damage. And again, like a lot of these, you know, these large cap stocks, we can get a bounce, but that's all I'd expect at this time anyway. Transurban, a bit of a steeper decline there, so a little bit more technical damage. And after you've got a little bit of tech, I'm not saying, you know, drastic, but that kind of technical damage does take some time to recover. So, yes, we might get a bounce. There's no evidence that we're going to get a bounce right here, right now. But, you know, if we get a bounce, I would not expect that bounce to take us to new all-time highs anytime soon.
Okay, so that was the top 20 we were talking about. And we now have Graham on the line from Victoria. So let's go to Graham. Graham, welcome to the show. How can we help you tonight?
Yeah, how are you guys? My question is Elders shares. I've been buying Elders last 2 or 3 months.
Sure.
And they've got a PE pretty low at the moment, and the beef prices are up, sheep's going all right, real estate's going all right. How's the future look, you reckon?
Sure. I mean, agriculture is always such a hard one because it moves around so much. And same as Elders stock that we've seen since the global financial crisis. At one point, you know, there was a question mark on whether it was going to survive at all, but it has managed to do that. And look, over the last 5 years, you know, things have been moving in their favour. So, Joe, looking at Elders today, though, what do you think?
Well, the research analyst on my team owns a cattle farm, and he's grown up in the industry, and he is selling a lot of his stock today with pretty high conviction that prices aren't going to get much better than they are today. So I think that's something I would consider if you're thinking about Elders now. I mean, commodities, as most people would know, the best cure for low prices is low prices, and it cuts both ways. So when you've got high prices, you're going to see more stock come online. It makes for cyclical times. And in terms of land, you know, it's a very, very asset-heavy business, so it's hard to generate high returns on capital. To be honest, a better way for me to kind of play, and this is a bit of a cheat, but to play agriculture is think about something like a Bellamy's. And I know you're like, that has nothing to do with agriculture. And maybe that's the case. But I tend to like Bellamy's in relation to this thesis, because people will look at a Bellamy's and they'll say, oh, well, infant formula, they've got a supply chain, and there are a lot of cows involved at some point, and there are. It's just they don't own the cows. Somebody else owns the cows. They buy the milk. They have someone else manufacture it. And it's basically just a brand, an IP company. To me, that's a much better way to play agriculture in a loose sense, really more consumer staples.
Okay, so preferring Bellamy's. Looking at Elders share price, you know, recently we've just been a bit of sideways movement. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, the chart doesn't really give it a great deal of justice. There's a significant trend that's been in place for well over a year. We saw prices move from $1 up to $4.50. And what we're looking at there on the chart at the moment is a bit of a correction of that big trend up. And that's a healthy thing. Ideally, we're getting some sideways price movement, as you can see. And if we've got to break up above that band, that sits at around 410. If we've got to break up above that band, that would certainly be a very, very positive trait. However, in the biggest scheme of things, technically, if we're looking at textbook patterns, we would expect another leg down, and that could possibly take us down towards $2.50. Again, I stress in the bigger scheme of things, that's not too bad, but that's potential if we break to the downside. But we're consolidating at the moment. I'd like to see it above 410 to get more confidence.
Okay, so a little bit of a consolidation. Elders in its turnaround plan, I think it's a three-year plan, and it's in year two of that three-year plan. It, of course, announced recently to the market it was divesting its live export business, so getting rid of some of the underperforming assets, which means upgrades to, I guess, future year earnings. And I guess the next step is perhaps reinstating dividends. So I guess this is a turnaround story, Joe. When you're looking for turnaround stories, I mean, at what stage do you get interested or what do you look for?
I've learned some hard lessons on turnarounds. So the first one is most turnarounds don't end up turning. The second point is that when I do look at turnarounds, I tend to wait for concrete evidence of the turnaround having already begun. And you can give up a little bit of your upside in doing that, but I prefer not to be a hero and instead try to see, because every management team is going to talk about a turnaround, but if you're looking at a retailer, for example, you want to see improved foot traffic, improved same-store sales, improved margins, improved market share, that kind of thing, before you just take management's word for it. And I'm willing to pay a little bit more to see that, because it can take a long time for that turnaround to flow through the financials and for the market to catch up for that. And once you do hop onto a turnaround that is working very well, I tend to hang on to it and let it run. So generally, I think it's tough to do. To be honest, there aren't very many successful turnaround investors for that reason. But when I go about looking at them, that's the set of ones that I'm using.
Okay, so great words of advice there coming through from Joe. So I hope that helps you out. Let's go to our next caller. We have John on the line from Perth. John, welcome to the show. How can we help you tonight?
Thank you, Julia. The stock that I have been following for a number of years is Gold Road Resources, and today they're up nearly 10% with 11 million shares traded. Now, there was an announcement out, and Goldfields has come in as a joint partner, if you like, on the Gruyere project. But that's not my question. What I would like to hear from the panel is discussion about the amount of shorts that have been taken out. Now, I'm referring to shortman.com.au. I don't know whether this is relevant, but on Friday, just gone, 1.6 million shares were shorted. The Thursday before that, nearly a million, and on the Wednesday before that, nearly 3 million shares. How does this play into the whole investors' portfolio? Because I would have thought that if there's nearly 54 million shares that are currently shorted, and that's as I read it, I don't know whether I'm correct or not, the people that have shorted it, surely they've got to buy them back on market. And hence, I would have thought that if that is the case and there was this major announcement, I would have thought maybe there would have been a bit of more balloon, air in that balloon to counteract these people wanting to buy those shares back.
Okay, so good question coming through from John around short positions in Gold Road, which has been increasing recently, and Gold Road coming out with a good announcement today and the shares rising around about 10% despite those short positions. Nick, any thoughts on this one?
Well, regarding the short positions, one of the things I've learned in my 30 years is you can't possibly know why other people have got positions on. You know, you've probably got hedge funds that are short this but long another stock. It's not a play on Gold Roads itself. It's a play on Gold Roads versus another stock. I mean, I'm guessing, because it's impossible to know what, why and how these people are positioning themselves. That's the first thing to understand. And I think the takeaway is that's at the end of the day, it's noise. That's what it is. And if you have a well-defined investment strategy, you know, my momentum strategy, we just follow the rules of that. We know it works and everything else is just noise. And it's not my concern as to what these shorts are doing, because I can't possibly know. I can't pick up the phone and ring that. This is the third show in a row that that website has come up on the show. So it's obviously playing on people's minds, but at the end of the day, we can't possibly know what they're doing and why they're doing it. So as a result, you just got to forget about it. Now, coming back to Gold Roads itself, technically, yeah, good upside day today. Technically, not a particularly strong day. very high volume, and the close was well off the day's highs. So you've got a situation where the stock's been trending down, you've got a reasonably good announcement, the stock has jumped higher, and sellers have taken the opportunity on that movement higher to unload their shares. So in my view, a weak close on high volume means there's sellers here, and until those sellers are satisfied, the stock's not going to go any higher. It might drift a little bit higher, but it probably can't go too much higher unless everyone changes their opinion as to why they sold today.
Okay. Joe, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, on short selling, I agree with Nick. There's a buyer and seller. There's a buyer and seller in every trade, and there's always going to be a difference of opinion. I do think short sellers probably collectively get a worse rap than is justified for. I actually think they add price discovery to the market. We're not short selling, so this isn't a sales pitch for a short fund. We'll have different sales pitch later. But in reality, I do think that they bring price discovery. They bring a different perspective, and I think it's fair that a critique I hear of short sellers is, oh, well, they go out and they criticize something and they talk it down because they're short. Well, I know plenty of people who have long positions that they don't talk up. I mean, that happens every night on this show and other shows. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, so as long as everyone is forthright about it and centers their lines. So all that said, I have to also say, I think companies tend to blame their problems on short sellers instead of addressing their underlying problems. If you're investing in a company and the biggest problem is that there are short sellers involved, that's not the biggest problem. There's something underlying with the business that you should be paying attention to if you're a long-term investor.
Okay. And I guess when you see a pop of 10% in the shares, usually there's some short sellers getting out of positions because it gets painful as well. So when you see some of those double-digit gains on the market, a lot of it is based on short covering, which is when short sellers buy back the stock to close out their position. And Gold Road, I noticed from the ASIC website, has a 6.7% short sold position in terms of their stock at the last report. Looking at Gold Road, I mean, it's a pretty interesting company, and you have to love a project that's named after a beautiful cheese. But on the Yamana Belt in Western Australia, and look, they've had big exploration results. So I guess the flip side is that it is speculative and it is gold, and gold, you know, hasn't just been a bull market the last few months. So, Nick, what are your thoughts on Gold Road?
Look, I don't personally have it. I bought some gold stocks. Gold Road's been one for my father. He has your traditional buy and hold portfolio with all the big blue chips in there. And so about 2 years ago, I bought him some gold stocks, only about 10% worth of his total portfolio, and this is one of them, and we've just been riding it up, and I'll keep that position on there. It's more of a general hedge, if you like, but look, the stock looks okay. I think all the gold stocks are doing okay. You know, there's going to be a little bit of volatility. We saw a little bit today. There's going to be some more in the next few days. Technically, gold broke down through that 1300. It's now tried to recover that. So I don't think gold's going anywhere in a hurry. Dare I say that today? Tomorrow I could be eating those words. But
President Trump.
But look, the trends are up. It's just a choppy ride, and you've just got to give it room to move, and hopefully that macro trend will keep going.
Okay, so looking at Gold Road, I mean, it is more on the speculative side in terms of the gold plays. It's got that joint venture with Sumitomo Mining, I think, metal mining. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Joe?
So you both know this one a lot better than I do, for sure, from the sounds of it. I guess I just generally don't invest in gold miners, and it's not specific to anyone on the spectrum. It's just that I struggle with how they can be cyclical, they're capital intensive, and generally I don't feel like I've got a good insight on where the price of gold is going to go. And so that to me is just a big question mark that makes it difficult for me as a long-term investor to weigh in the space.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, but we'll be back to answer more of your questions in just a moment. If you'd like to speak with our expert panel, please give us a call. Our number's 1300 30 34 35, or you can email yourmoney@skynews.com.au. Welcome back to the show. If you have a question you'd like answered, pick up the phone and give us a call on 1300 30 34 35, or you can also email us on yourmoney@skynews.com.au. And we now have Trevor on the line from Adelaide. Trevor, welcome to the show. How can we help you tonight?
Thanks very much, Julia. I'd like the panels here on two stocks. One is Mount Gibson and the other one is BlueScope steel, please?
Sure. So having a look at Mount Gibson Iron and BlueScope Steel, I mean, both stocks that have been doing relatively well lately. Let's start off by having a look at Mount Gibson. And we might start off with a technical view. So,
sure.
Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, look, I think it looks good. Earlier on, we're talking about turnaround stocks. And technically, you know, we can also look at turnaround-type technical situations, and Mount Gibson fits that bill quite well. Back in 2014, the stock was up around $1.20 and collapsed all the way down to 20 cents. Now, when it hit 20 cents, it dropped 50% in one day. Now, that's the first stage of a turnaround, capitulation. And then what we saw all the way through 2015 and most of the way through 2016 was a big sideways range, and that's stage two of the turnaround situation. That's a big basing pattern. And that's when people who have been holding the stock for a long time give up hope of it bouncing, and they just get bored holding it and they want to put their money elsewhere. But the insiders, they're just sitting there accumulating the stock. They're in no hurry to go anywhere. They're happy to sit there and take from those sellers. And we saw that for a period of about 18 months. And once the supply pressure dries up, those sellers that are bored have finished with it, they just want out now. Once they're done, then the stock can start getting marked up. And that's what we've been seeing since July. So back then, the stock was trading at around 23 cents, 22 cents, and we've started to move up. I think we've put on about 50% since then. So I think it looks really, really good. Great basing formation. We're starting to move out of that. And historically, this stock trends very, very well. And I wouldn't be surprised if it got some legs and started going again. So I really like it.
Okay, so Nick likes it from a technical viewpoint. And look, tomorrow's a key day for Mount Gibson. So Wednesday it has its annual general meeting. And one of the key catalysts for Mount Gibson is its Iron Hill project. And, of course, market's going to be watching for any news and approvals for the Iron Hill project. So that's going to be a key catalyst to be watching tomorrow. But Joe, for you, Mount Gibson, I mean, this one has cash of $417 million, which equates to 38 cents per share, which is above where the share price is trading at the moment.
So this isn't classically something that I would be all over, but I do think that if you could have a basket of companies, and this is very Ben Graham, this is classic value investing, if you could have a basket of 20, 30, 40 companies that are all selling for less than the net cash that they have, on average, you're going to do extremely well with those. And I would challenge anyone to find 20, 30, 40 of those on the ASX. If you know them, I would love for you to get in touch with me. But the reality is it's a pretty rare event. In this case, there's obviously a lot of pessimism about the core business, and that's why it's selling for less than net cash. That said, I do think that your range of outcomes here is probably very well skewed, but it's still not to say it's a light risk situation, but in aggregate with situations like this, I think you could do pretty well.
Okay, so generally, you know, when you've got that big cash balance, especially when it's more than what the actual share price is trading at, tends to be a good sign on the market. Now, the other one's BlueScope Steel, and this is, talking about turnaround plays that go right, this is an amazing turnaround, BlueScope Steel. Looking at the technicals, though, what do you think, Nick?
Yeah, well, the stock's up, 300% over the last year or so, and we're now just pulling back. So, again, this is the typical chart-type pattern, strong impulsive price action up and then choppy price action on the way back down again. And so long as it remains choppy, then that's a good sign. It's coming back to support now. Support sits around that $7 mark. We're just a little above that now, so we might just drift a little bit lower. But so long as the price action remains, you know, chopping around a little bit, I think it's fine. And again, a stock that trends very well when it gets going, both up and down, dare I say. But it has been doing very, very well. So a nice, healthy correction taking place.
Okay, so that's BlueScope Steel. I mean, looking at BlueScope Steel, you know, what a fantastic ride from almost going broke to, you know, seeing it around the $8 mark. I guess one of the things we do watch with BlueScope Steel is that we know that Coke and Cola is an import and that's likely to squeeze margins. So while they've seen a very good first half of the year, the second half might be a bit tougher.
That's a reasonable concern. I think that this is one of those businesses that the longer you hold it, the less likely you are to do well. It's fairly cyclical. It's extremely capital hungry. And if you look at it, I mean, there was a stretch where they had falling sales 4 out of 5 years. So while the last 3 years have been a pretty strong turn, and that's great, more power to them, it's just a reminder that it can be a wild ride. And I think shareholders over the long term will probably end up with pretty ordinary returns with companies that are this capital hungry and this cyclical.
But I guess the other thing is, Nick, when we look at a company like this, people just did not like it. It was about to go broke, and most, you know, institutions were underweight the whole way up.
Sure.
And do you think that helped the share price?
Well, potentially, yeah. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, what I was saying before. It's difficult to know what other people are thinking. Obviously, there's people out there with opinions and whatever else. But to actually know how the institutions were positioned and what their strategy is or their, you know, their outlook was is impossible to know. But you usually see this. The market forward prices, that's the bottom line. So when the insiders know something is happening or something is going to happen, then that's when you start to see the price action moving. The institutions are pretty well in the know with what's going on or what's going to happen, and they'll position themselves accordingly. So, you know, that's what you've got to look for. And that's why I'm a momentum kind of guy, because, you know, the market forward prices, and we don't predict, we just go with it. And if the market's going to, you know, start to love something, then the price is going to start to move ahead of time before that announcement is made, and that'll get us on board. So, you know, and same on the flip side. If the market starts to dislike something, then they're going to start pricing that in. That'll pop us off, and then the announcement will tend to come out.
Okay, so I guess a big turnaround play for BlueScope still, you know, between 2011 and 2014, it had about $2.2 billion worth of losses, but the last result we saw underlying profit up by 120% to $293 million. So that turnaround helping to fuel the share price, one of the best performers on our market over the last 3 years. It is time for a short break, but we'll be back with more of your calls in just a moment. Welcome back to the program. Let's go straight to our next caller. We have David on the line from Mittagong. David, welcome to the program. How can we help you out tonight?
Yeah, hi, Julia.
Hi.
I've got a like your opinion on two small cap stocks.
Sure.
One's Premium, stock code PPS, and the other's Thorny Opportunities, TOP. Thanks.
Sure. So having a look at Premium and Thorny Opportunities. So we'll start off with Premium, PPS. I mean, I think this has been a great story, and both of our panelists love that small cap area, and that's, this one's been a successful one. It's got a number of products which basically services accounts and self-managed super funds and helps brokers and financial planners and advisors out. So they've got the SMA platform, VRAP, Wealthcraft, as well as Smart. And I guess it helps when you've got record inflows coming through, despite that low Great British pound. Recently, though, we've seen a little bit of a pullback. Is that all currency related?
Well,
pullback that needed to happen.
Yeah, look, I just think that's just general market pullback. I quite like the look of it. I talked about this stock on my podcast just the other night. Actually, technically, it looks very, very good. The pullback is textbook, because what's happened, we've broken out of a big ongoing basing pattern there, if you like, and now that we've broken out, these big patterns tend to do what's called a retest. In other words, they break out and they come back, retest that breakout point, then they go off again. And that's exactly what's happened almost to the cent right here. You can see it's just pulled back a little bit, it's gone off again, and that looks really, really good to me. Upside target, I think I mentioned in the podcast the other day, was 65 cents compared to today's closing price of 47.5. I think it's a very low risk entry, high reward kind of trade right here, right now.
Okay, low risk, high reward. We like that PPS. I mean, the Great British pound, you know, has an impact if you're making a profit, but if you're making a loss, does that mean you're making a smaller loss?
It does. You know, I like Premium. I think the valuation, the shares have run up quite a bit lately, and that is, I suppose if you own them, you're happy with that. If you wanted to get some, less so. I do think that this is a business that is very nicely positioned for trends towards SMAs and more tax-efficient investing. I think the Premium is well positioned for that. I think that the nature of the model is you get fairly sticky assets on the platform. It's a very scalable model, and they've rolled out some of their own funds and structures that have taken off very nicely. So overall, I think it's a business with pretty bright prospects. The valuation is, it's not conventionally cheap, but I think if you're looking at this with a 5 to 10 year hold, then you could do pretty well, and I would think this is a market beater. Oh, and something else, the management team there, they got a lot of skin in the game, and they're pretty they deserve a lot of the credit for the turnaround and the business, both the share price and fundamentals.
We have agreement. We need
Yay!
So it was premium PPS, both the panelists liking premium. The other thorny opportunities, TOP is a stock code there. It's, I guess it's an investment company with a portfolio of different companies. I think they've got two key funds. One's the long-term portfolio and the other one's the trading portfolio. And generally, the rule of thumb is you want to sort of buy under the net asset backing. Net asset backing is about 70 cents and the stock today was at 68 and a half cents. So TOP is a stock code. Yeah. Joe, you're just about to launch your own fund, so you can probably give us some insights into buying into an investment company. What
are you looking for? So broadly speaking, you want to look for track record. So I'm not familiar with this fund. I don't know the thorny guy as well at all. But I would look back and see how well they performed, how well the fund itself has performed. So any performance data you can get helps to round out that picture. I'd also look at how deeply a discount this fund has sold against its NAV. It's typical for LICs to sell at discounts because they're paying fees, so there is a cut against that NAV. So I guess I say that because it might be selling for, say, a 2% discount to NAV, but if the norm is 10, then maybe you're not actually paying a good price. And that's not specific to this one. It's just broadly speaking something I would look at. But big picture with any asset manager, you're thinking about track record, you're thinking about experience and reputation. So.
Okay, so looking at that track record, I think it used to be Wentworth and they had a name change to Thorney. What do you think of this one, Nick?
Well, we don't really look at LICs. I mean, that's a good trend going on there. Very liquid kind of stock, obviously. So, you know, it's going, I don't know what kind of businesses they invest in or whatever, but whatever they have been doing looks like it's going okay for them and their share price is moving in the right direction. So, I don't know. Is it like a Soul Patts or something like that? I don't know what they even
I just had a look at their website. So some of their major investments. So give me your thoughts. AMA Group, which is focused on the wholesale vehicle aftercare and accessories market. Austin Engineering, a leading designer and manufacturer of custom dump truck bodies. Diversa, DVA, financial company, which is listed on the ASX. And Money3, which is another smaller finance company, which is listed on the ASX, and ServiceStream, SSM, as well as TPI Enterprises, TPE, which is a licensed poppy processor. Any views on any of those stocks, Joe?
To be honest, I don't have deep opinions on them. Diversa was merged recently into OneView, which is a pretty similar thesis to Premium. It's another platform business, I think. Of the two, I'd probably lean towards Premium. And if you're looking in that space, another one I think is attractive is Hub24. Their assets are growing even faster than Premium, and I think the valuation is reasonable for the amount of growth that you're doing there.
Okay. Any views on those stocks? Obviously, focusing in on the small end of the town with this fund.
Well, the only one that really rings a bell with me is ServiceStream. We rode that trend for the last year or so. We recently got out on that leg down. Again, stock that has a tendency to trend very, very well and the kinds of stocks we like to ride, which we did for quite some time. So unfortunate that we had that stiff down leg there, but, you know, that's what happens sometimes. We hopped out, took our profit, and we'll just sit on the sidelines. Hopefully it will consolidate here, and if it does consolidate over the next few months and then break out again, we might join it again. But that's the only one that really comes to mind.
And it looks like, you know, Thornley is the largest shareholder in ServiceStream, 16.7%. Right. That's Thornley International. Thornley Management Services also has a 7% stake. So some pretty big stakes here. Austin Engineering, 8.5% stake. AMA, 5.1%. Mesa Blast, 5.7%. Money3, 5.4%. So lots of interesting investments there. So there we were talking about Thornley as well as Premium, PPS and TOP, other stock codes there. We now have an email here from Scott who asks, is carsales.com a buy at, say, $10? Love the show. Thanks, Scott. Looking at car sales, and well, today finally saw a little bit of a bounce back for car sales. Actually, that was REA we saw a bounce back for. Unfortunately, we didn't see a bounce back for car sales, down another 1.3%. That chart doesn't look too pretty recently. What do you think, Nick?
No, a lot of technical damage. This stock was trading at $13.50 not long ago, and we're now $10. So we've had a 30% decline, and in anyone's language, that's pretty serious. There's a major line of support just below here around that 950, 940 area. By the looks of the chart, we're going to go down there, so I wouldn't be touching it right here, right now.
Okay, so no one car sales. I mean, this was the darling of the market. We were seeing record car sales, lots of volumes going through. You know, Joe, what do you think of the
company? Yeah, I would dive into the pool. I'd dive into the pool here. This is a business with pretty powerful network effects, so if anyone out there isn't familiar, it's where buyers and sellers come together and meet in the same way that you think about a stock exchange. It's the place. They have absolute stranglehold position on their market. Car dealers have almost no choice but to work with them, and once they're on there, they almost never leave. That's pretty attractive. They also do a lot of used car volume, so yeah, you might put off, again, referencing earlier, you might put off buying a new car during tough times, but used car volumes tend to stay pretty healthy, and pricing tends to stay healthy during recessions. So, and I know that has never happened here, but hypothetically. and I think the valuation, yeah, it definitely was riding pretty high there, but it's come back quite a bit. Dividends attractive, and I think this is a pretty good one to own for 5-10 years.
Okay, so liking car sales from Joe, but not liking it from Nick, which also demonstrates their approach. Nick very much momentum-based.
Sure.
And Joe very much value-based. We are going to take a short break, but we'll be back to answer more of your questions in just a moment. Welcome back to the program. If you have a question about shares or stocks, our phone lines are open on 1300 303435, or you can email us on yourmoney@skynews.com.au. And we now have Nancy on the line from Sydney. Nancy, welcome to the show. How can we help you out tonight?
Hi, Julia.
Hi.
I'm asking about Austin Engineering.
Sure.
And Evolution Mining.
Sure.
I don't know if you've got time for all search, but it doesn't matter if you have.
Sure, sir. Austin Engineering, Evolution Mining and Oil Search. Let's start off with Austin Engineering. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago it was a bit of a basket case, lots sort of in terms of losses, huge amount of debt. I still imagine that they have a lot of debt, but, you know, a bit of a turnaround from the lows that we saw in July at about 9 cents. It's doubled since then, which is a very nice ride for shareholders. Austin Engineering, of course, looks at things like dump truck bodies, excavator buckets, service vehicles, tire handling equipment, all the things that you tend to use when you're mining. So looking at the share price, it's a nice looking chart recently, Nick. What do you think?
Yeah, again, it's very similar to MGX in that the off to the left there, we can't really see it, but this stock has been in a sustained downtrend. I think it wasn't that long ago, 2013, it was trading up at $4.50, and earlier this year we went down sub 10 cents. So what we tend to look for in this kind of a situation is a big long-term basing pattern, and this one basically started forming in early 2016, trading sideways there till recently September, late September, and then started moving up. And that's a good thing. Again, this is one I recently talked about on my podcast. It's these basing patterns that you can get some explosive moves out of. Caroon's another one. We talked about MGX. So this one's doing the same kind of thing, and it's a slow climb higher. So, yeah, again, I like it. Volume, interestingly enough, volume has started to pick up quite dramatically over the last 3 months again. So I'm not quite sure what's driving that, but that would be interesting to investigate what is driving that. But, yeah, I like the look of it.
Okay, so some volume. And look, the market's just betting, I think, that the worst is behind these mining services companies and the mining sector for the time being. What are your thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, I think this is definitely an aggressive bet on the direction of mining. I think that's been the driving force recently is recovery in commodity prices almost across the board. I do think that you have to have a lot of confidence that that is sustainable and that that will probably improve. The reality is that there's still quite a bit of supply out there on almost every industrial commodity that you could think of. And while some of it has come offline, there's been huge pressure on the cost curve in almost every commodity class. So That's just to say, I think it's tough going. They do still have about $40 million in net debt, which is a lot to pay down. And, you know, if the status quo had held from the past year, then that's not a tenable long-term situation. So if you are a buyer today, you're doing it because you have conviction that commodity prices will stay here or go higher. And if they go backwards, then this business is in pretty dire condition. And that's why the shares are down 95% over the last 5 years.
Okay, so that's Austin Engineering. Recently, we've seen a bit of a revival in terms of the share price, which has doubled in the last sort of 5-6 months. And we've seen volume picking up in the last 3 months as well. Evolution Mining, I mean, this has been a fantastic ride since 2015 when, you know, the share price was at 40 cents. Today at $2.29, still pretty far from the highs we saw at $3.04 not too long ago. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, again, like Gold Roads, this is one I've put in my father's portfolio. It's not to say that I'm not respecting my father's portfolio, but...
another one I dumped on Dad. Yeah.
Transfer in there. No, again, another gold stock. It's correcting at the moment, and it looks like there's some more downside to be done here. Potentially, worst-case scenario, we could actually slip as far down as 160, but in the bigger scheme of things, that would be considered a pretty usual correction in the larger multi-year kind of trend that's been going on. But again, it's a gold stock, and this time tomorrow night, well, we could be anywhere.
Okay, so pretty volatile for the gold players, going and swinging from being the best area to the worst area on any given week. But the other one was Oil Search. OSH is the stock code there. Today, the stock up 1.4%. You know, a lot of these oil companies... A bit range bound.
That's what I'm talking about. It's the top end of town, and they're all doing this kind of stuff. You know, this chart looks very similar to almost a CBA chart because it's done nothing for 2 years. It's just chopping in a range like that. And again, the way to play it is the bottom end of the range, which here is around that $6. The top end of range is around $7.50, $7.60, and that's it. At the moment, we're smack bang in the middle of that. So unless we get down to the bottom end of the range, then I'll just leave it alone.
Okay, so a bit of range trading. Interested in any of the oil and gas companies, Joe?
No, I have been humbled, and I think hopefully most of us have been, with trying to predict the price of oil and where it's headed. In theory, it should be easy because it should gravitate towards the marginal cost to pull it out of the ground. In reality, the marginal cost to pull it out of the ground shifts, and that price can swing wildly. So I think it's tougher than it looks to do, and a lot of these companies can overextend themselves financially. Oil Search has quite a bit of debt, and it can be make for a wild ride, which I think a lot of investors learn the hard way.
Okay, so that was Austin Engineering, Evolution Mining, as well as Oil Search. Hope that helps you out, Nancy. We now have May on the line from Melbourne. May, welcome to the program. How can we help you tonight?
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hi, Julie.
Hi.
Yeah. I should like to have the panel's opinion on two stocks.
Sure.
IPH and Catapult.
Okay.
And should I invest in them?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Let's have a look at these two companies. They are on the small side, which tends to be where the gains are, but certainly haven't been for IPH, or Intellect Property Holdings, lately. They have made an acquisition recently which takes them deeper into Asia. So announced their first international acquisition upon reaching agreement to acquire Ella Chong in Hong Kong and moving, I guess, further offshore. But, you know, when this hit the market, it was a darling of the market. And, you know, look, the stock price just has not gone the right way. It owns a whole lot of different companies in intellectual property services in the Asia Pacific region. It's got about, I think, over 400 staff. Joe, what do you think of IPH?
To be totally honest with you, it's not really my wheelhouse. I'll just add that it's a recommendation, our dividend investor service, and it's rated one of our best buys there.
Okay, so under the dividend service, it's got a strong buy with Motley Fool, I think a dividend
yield. Our good buddy Andrew Page.
Of about 4.5% there. And what do you think here, Nick?
Well, I think, you know, one theme we've heard a lot about tonight is these market darlings that has fallen back. And, you know, we can look through history and see a lot of these kinds of things. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I like momentum following, because you can ride the market darlings up whilst they're darlings and get out of them whilst they're dogs. And this is basically what's happened here. This stock not so long ago was $3. It went all the way up to $9.50. And where are we now? We're back to $5.50. Big line of support right here. Trend is definitely down. No question about that. And, you know, if we can sit above this line of support, which is around that 535, 550 area where we are now, if we can stay above here and consolidate for a period of time, say another month or so, and then start to get some upside traction, well, it might start to look attractive. But at the moment, the trend is down, and we need to see the share price stabilise before getting in again.
Okay, so wanting to see the share price stabilise, I guess the reason why brokers like this company is because intellectual property is a growing area, and this is the number one intellectual property firm in Singapore, which tends to be a hub for all of the Asia Pacific. So you've got growth in the market of that intellectual property space, and then you're number one in what's a hub in the Asia Pacific, and it gives you a good base to ultimately, I guess, become the global firm for intellectual property. But unfortunately, the share price has pulled back, as we've seen with a lot of high PE ratio stocks. The other one is Catapult. Once again, a high PE ratio stock. It has been a little bit volatile, but the share price does look a little bit kinder than the last one that we saw. So Catapult, what do you think, Peter?
I love this business. Love it. Less in love with the valuation. So the business, I assume you're somewhat familiar with Catapult, people who aren't. Catapult produces hardware and software packages. Basically, it's what kind of looks like a sports bra, effectively, where you're wearing a piece of hardware in the back that athletes wear while they're playing, and it helps the coaching staff assess whether or not an athlete's getting fatigued and is at a higher risk of injury. There are numerous other applications of it, but that's the biggest value add. It's growing very, very quickly with professional and amateur sports leagues. I think they are developing pretty powerful network effects and running away with the markets they're in. I also like the acquisition they recently did of Exos. Cash flow generative business, strong retention rates, both with that business that they just bought and the existing business. All positive things to say about it. The only thing is the valuation is pretty rich. If you look at a Google Finance, that number does not account for all the shares on issue. So I would actually look at their latest investor presentations where they're very transparent about that. And you can see the numbers on issue. So it's all right there in the financials. They make it very clean. But just something to be mindful of. And this is one that I would love to see get unfairly crushed or punished, and I would back up the truck on.
So Catapult looks at monitoring athletes and collects all that data to try and optimize performance. And of course, you know, data has value in itself as well for all those fantasy football competitions and betting around the globe. Looking at Catapult, what do you think, Nick?
Yeah, look, I think it looks good. It's had an amazing trend over the years. Early 2015, where we were trading around 80 cents, got up to $4.20. We're now consolidating and pulling back a little bit. So, you know, it's a healthy kind of trend. It may just continue to consolidate here, but yeah, I like the look of it. Trends well when it gets going. Got a little ahead of itself there, a little blow off top up there, a lot of volume coming into it. Might have been some kind of an announcement, and it's just pulling back from that. So, yeah, I quite like it.
Okay, so liking it, and a great story for shareholders. It IPO'd at 54 cents back in December 2014, so just over 20 months ago, and it's now $3.34. We now have an email here from Tom who asks, what are your thoughts on BAL and A2M? So looking at Bellamy's and A2 milk in the baby formula space. You know, both of these have been pretty volatile because of some of the I guess some of the disruption that we are seeing in China, a lot of cost cutting, especially from the European manufacturers of baby formula, and the oversupply that we're seeing, and I guess cutting down on stocking up on inventory that we are seeing from China. However, you know, today we heard from A2 Milk, and the news isn't all bad. They had a pretty positive update, and the stock up by 8.8%. Joe, I know you like Bellamy's. What do you think
about A2 Milk? I like both of them. I think Bellamy's of the two would be my favorite. And I think that there are short-term risks to both. And I'm normally not the short-term risk guy, but it's something to be pragmatic about, that there's gray market risk here and that there is an oversupply of product in China because the government is tightening in a good way. They're tightening competition, and they're going to basically push out a lot of the smaller players. That means that there's going to be essentially a dumping of supply onto the market. So that's short-term bad. There are also potential disruptions with the government just upending rules. There have been a couple examples of this with the infant formula market, where the government has been very easy about rules around shipping infant formula into China. A2 and Bellamy's have both been big beneficiaries of that. Sales here in Australia being shipped back to China. Now, the thing is, on the one hand, that sounds bad, and in the very short term, it's true. In the medium term, you look a little further out, they actually get much better margins selling directly into China themselves. So there could be some pain there, but overall, if you're a long-term investor, I think they're both attractive, and of the two, I prefer Bellamy's, but yeah.
Okay, so liking them. I mean, I remember, it feels like it wasn't too long ago, but I was having a conversation with you, Nick, about Bellamy's and how it looked too expensive at $2.20 to get in, and you said to me, Julia, you're going to be saying the same thing when it gets to $10. So I bought the stock, I sold out too early, and lo and behold, it went to $10 and beyond. Yeah. What do you think of the stock now?
It can never be too expensive. Oh, look, it's range-bound at the moment. I wouldn't be touching it. Upside momentum has been lost for the moment. You know, it still looks okay from a technical perspective, bigger picture. Again, big trend. You need some time for it to pause, gather itself, and then go on again. But at this stage, there's no upside momentum in Bellamy's. A little bit more upside momentum in A2 Milk, but each time we've come up to this level, today was a very good day, I should say, for A2 Milk, closed on the high, up 8.8 on solid volume, so that's a good day. But just above here, every time we've been up, A2 Milk has been slapped straight back down again. So we'd really like to get up to those old highs, I think around that 220, 230 area, hold for a little while. And if we can hold for a little while, I think that will set it up for the next move higher. But it's got to stay up there, and at this stage, every time we get up there, sellers move straight in.
Okay, so that was A2 and Bellamy's, and that's all we have time for today. Thanks so much to our guest tonight for a fantastic show, Joe Mega from Lighthouse Capital and also Nick Raj from The Charters, and to you, our viewers, for all your calls and your emails. If you missed any of the show or want to listen again or catch up on any of the program, go to your favourite podcast platform and search for Sky News, Your Money, Your Call. Until next week, I'm Julia Lee from Bell Direct. Thanks for your company.
The information featured in this program is general in nature and therefore should not be relied upon. Guests appearing on the program may have commercial arrangements with some of the companies mentioned. Before making any investment, insurance or financial planning decisions, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you.